Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Rice Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I try to upload an episode to it once a week. I've been pretty consistent lately. I got three in the last 7 days because I had to make up for one where I was trying to get it in, but I had internet trouble. Internet's working right now. So I went ahead and got back to business. So the other way you're listening to the podcast is through iTunes. Just enter LORDGAUL for Lord Gaul, or enter Warman Kickfighting Show and the podcast pops right up. So basically, I'm just going to preview two cards today, two rather big cards. We've got the Final 16 for the WFL. I mean, I'm a real big fan of what Melvin Manhoff's promotion has been doing. They've done great stuff. They got a TV deal. They are putting on shows with high-level competitors. They're really doing a great job. And, of course, Glory, the company that I work for, we've got an event going down in France this weekend. So the difference in them is I will make predictions for the WFL. Go ahead and break it down, tell you what I'm thinking, tell you how I think things will break down. And then when I go to the Glory card, I'll just go ahead and go matchup by matchup, tell you about the athletes, and do my best to sell you on the product. So I'll go ahead and jump into it. We will go ahead and start off with the WFL, which, of course, will be headlined by Melvin Manhoff and Remy Bomjowski. I did an entire episode on that fight. So, like, the last podcast is all about that fight, all about that rivalry. Won't get into that battle as much. I'll just mention that I think even at this stage in Remy Bonjowski's life, he's still able to out-kickbox and find the explosive moments to score in Melvin Manhoff. Manhoff has definitely been more active lately, but he's also suffered some tough losses in mixed martial arts. He says it's his retirement fight, and I think Remy's a good one. It is possible that he could, you know, combo low kick and get into that game. I just haven't seen that version of him for a long time. So Melvin could outscore Remy if he gets into the game that he played when they first fought so many years ago. That was 2002 that they first fought. But as far as right now, today's day and age, it'll be curious to see how that holds up. But that is a fight that I really broke down in depth on the last podcast. So I will just mention that briefly. I lean towards Remy Bonjowski over Melvin Manhoff. But I'm going to go ahead and jump into the card now. First, just going to mention a couple things. Yiris El Altamoy and Yunus Smalley, or Smalley, is going to be a fun fight. Yunus Smalley is like one of the up-and-coming guys to be watching. So really, really check this fight out at 65 kgs. A lot of fun. Really, really talented. Jamie Johansson and Juan Javier Barragan. Again, two younger guys that not many people know as well. Definitely a fight to check out on the undercard part. They have, let me see, I won't go into the new talent part. As far as super fights go, Abigail Diekman, and she takes on Isuri Henrique. Isuri has been fighting at a high level for a long time. I think she's got a couple of Glory outings, maybe one. That should be a good one as far as the female fights go. And then also at 77 kgs, Kevin Hessling and Daryl Stichman. Daryl Stichman is just one of those constant workmen-like kickboxers that have fought on a lot of different levels, fought in all over Europe for different promotions. I'm a big fan of Daryl Stichman, win or lose. I think that's it. There's Moya and Overmeer. That's another one at 77 kgs. Nothing that I wanted to get into too deep for the purpose of really focusing on the 16 tournament. First of all, let's go ahead and get to the big part of it. The idea of the 16, Final 16 is something, of course, that the K1 did extremely well. The K1 elimination did 16, and then a one-night eight-man tournament. It's a great way to build stars, and it's a great way for the old brass to go against the new. So the way K1 did it was they would have, you know, the returning stars from last year. That would be 8 spots. And then another 8 spots would be people who earned those spots throughout the year, whether they won a regional tournament or they had a big win. That was the goal to how you did it. And the reason why it was cool was because I know some people wanted that, you know, maybe veterans should go against veteran for one of those spots and then we can get some new guys in. I know that's how some people felt about it. But for me personally, I think you can help your brand of becoming a star by beating another star. So it's like it allows you to get yourself, you know, into the door. Now, again, there are those Freddie Kamayo, you know, Gokhan Saki type matchups that just turn out to be awesome performance for one guy when he doesn't have to go against, you know, one of the veterans who had already held that spot. But Saki would be considered a veteran in that situation. He was just showing his skill, and he moved on to the tournament once again. So in this situation, we do not have the history because it's their first time doing it. But it's a great way to build stars. It means that the winner of this tournament would have won four fights. And this 16 and then the 8-man. And that's four fights for you to follow, watch a person develop, and say, hey, I want to see that person compete again. So I think they did a really good job of doing a final 16. Should be a lot of fun. I don't know when the main is scheduled because that's always a big part of it. You guys heard me talk about with the Infusion. I thought the Infusion League was a good idea. I thought the execution of it was a little bit tougher because they stretched it for so long. It feels like a year and a half, more than a year and a half that since it started. So you look at the league and then you look at what happens with the Final 16. If they do this now and then they do the final in December or January, that's a win. But they usually do a big show in April every year. So if they don't do the final eight till then, that's a loss. It's way too long. So we'll see when that next one comes up. All I know is I'm really, really excited about the card. Let's go ahead and jump into the fights. We've got Levy Reuters as he goes against Rodon Caro. Levy Reuters, his frame is a little bit thinner, but he does do good kickboxing things. Combination low kick flow, he'll play with it every once in a while. He's got sneaky singles, got a nice straight, his power hand straight's really, really good. He can throw the high kick well off of turns. He's got some good skill set. Rodon Caro, though, was a guy who really built himself in small organizations. And he's lost here and there, but, man, to become champion in Romania and that and the things that he did for Super Combat, he really did build his brand. He's got the good, strong boxing, the sneaky knees. He's got explosive attacks that come here and there. He usually fights at the same pace, but then all of a sudden, bang, there's an explosion. So I lean on the more experience and the the fighter who's done better against higher opposition in this one, and I like Rodon Caro. We go to the next fight, Wilborn, as he takes on Sam Tivetti. Interesting thing about Wilborn, he is one of the veteran guys. I don't think I've ever mentioned him on this podcast, but he really is. If you go ahead and you put in that name, go ahead and do it now, R-E-A-M-O-N, Wilborn. Go ahead and put that into your YouTube search engine, and you will see that he's fought everybody. He's fought a lot of people. On their way up, they fight him. You know, he's kind of, I don't know if you want to use the term gatekeeper, but he's definitely someone that you can find out how good you are when you go against him. Good-sized guy. He fought Rico Verhaeren back in the day when Rico was on his way up, and he just looks like he just dwarfs over Rico. Imagine that. As big as Rico is, he looks like he's just such a bigger, taller, longer guy. He has okay combo flow. He throws them with okay speed, but his general movement isn't the fastest. Sam Tivetti, good kickboxer. He's got a solid win over, I want to say, I hope I remember it correctly, and Adoraman Kalabali, who will be fighting for glory this weekend. He is a talented guy who's been consistent, gets opportunities. I think his skill's all right. I think that he has to win this kind of fight, but I think he too needs something to the kind of performance to break out. Neither guy has what I would call particularly good KO pop, but I do think that he is a solid fighter, and I think that he'll put on a decent show. Serkan Azkaglayan, as he takes on Fabio Quasi. Fabio Quasi's been doing it for a long time. He's a talented guy, and Serkan's got skill too, but Quasi is more experienced, has more successful fights against bigger names at this point in their career. Not saying that Serkan isn't on the way up, but we'll see. This one's kind of a pick'em one for me, but I lean Quasi because I like who he's fought, and I've liked the his losses don't bother me as much as Serkan's wins. I think Serkan just needs to keep pushing, and bigger opportunities will come. Serkan's not bad, not a bad fighter, but man, I think Quasi's better. Fred Sinking, it'll go against Boy Martin. This is actually a rematch. I think that the first fight happened last year in February. And Boy, it's interesting because Fred Sinking, course, he had the really big win over Michael Duhut earlier this year. And he's got good power, brings it. He just has these points in fights where it's just, he seems like he never finds his rhythm. He never finds how he wants to have consistent offensive success. When he lets it go, he's fine. But he just has these moments where it's just not throwing. And whenever he does, he looks great. And whenever he doesn't, people can get up on him. And Boy Martin, he can find, first of all, he's got one of the cooler names in kickboxing, but he can find his offense. Sneaky straight shots, sneaky head kicks, like just he scores consistently awkward, and if you can, you know, put a term to it, he just really finds angles the right way, and he really finds the right time to throw a shot. Not necessarily a KO hitter, but he can hit you at the right time and put you down. So Boy Martin and Fred Sicking, that should be a lot of fun. You know, part of me leans Sicking because Sicking really was the more powerful. You know, when he threw, it looked like he had much more impact than Martin did. But Martin could just move and keep Sicking off balance and make Sicking's frustrated and make Sicking wait. And then he was able to score offense that in some ways could have scored just as well as Sicking's power shots. Very, very interesting. I lean Sicking just a little bit. I do think Boy Martin will probably outscore him. But I think Sicking can score the kind of offense that gets win, you know, the sexy shots, that wins scorecard. So that's going to be a fun fight. Tariq Kababez gets Nordin Mihiyadin. And Nordin is, you know, when I looked him up, another guy who's fought a lot of people who, you know, again, just needs that step up bout. Tariq is interesting because he's got one of the more interesting nicknames. They call him Pretty Boy, and he has this burn around his cheek and jaw area. I would say more around the jaw under his lip. And so you can see that that's probably a real nickname that he got, you know, with the Pretty Boy. But his kickboxing skill isn't bad. He's got okay punching power, but more kind of off of timing. Doesn't necessarily have a really kind of fast twitch, you know, big kind of hits. But Nordin has seen some really tough guys. He's a good competitor. I'm a fan of his in terms of just being a consistent kickboxer whose name comes up on a lot of cards. But this is kind of a pick-em one for me. I will lean Nordin to get the victory here. We move down as we got Enriquez Zawa as he goes against Murat Aygin. Now, Murat Aygin is another fighter who, and I think I may have said it wrong, I think Murat is the one who has the victory over Kalabali. Nevertheless, he's a tough kid, and Murat is coming off of an interesting win where he fought Errol Zimmerman, and you can make the argument that it could have went to a draw because Errol Zimmerman scores a knockdown, I want to say, in the second round with a left hook. It's a really, really entertaining round. Murat comes out. He knows his pacing really well. Also, his fan base travels. So you'll hear some Murat cheers when you watch this fight from the crowd. So anyways, he gets into a good combination of low kick flow, lets his hands go really, really well if you back yourselves up to the rope, hits good, not necessarily super hard, but he hits stiff. Like, he definitely throws some good solid punches. I like his kickboxing skill set. Enrique Zawa, same thing. His pacing is the thing that's weird for me. I feel like he matches whatever pace comes at him. So as I'm watching some of his old fights, one of the most joyful fights for me to experience, and I mean, it was an awesome, awesome fight for me to watch, was Zawa versus Michael Duhut. And again, you know, some people are critical of Duhut because they feel like it's a mental game. Once things don't go his way, he shuts down. He's not the same fighter. He's not as aggressive. But for me, watching this, you know, watching how that fight took place, he came out guns blazing, and he dropped Zawa right away. And here's something, and I really wish, I want you guys to look it up. Go ahead and look up Henriquez Zawa. So Henriquez, last name Zawa, Zowa, versus Michael Duhut. Duhut, just Duhut. The reason why I want you guys to look this fight up is it is the perfect example of how you fight when the ref doesn't seem like it's on your side, because the ref was not on Zawa's side. Immediately into the fight, Duhut comes out guns blazing, as we've seen him do so many times over his career, and he scores a down on Zawa really, really quickly, like maybe 15 seconds into the fight. When they get up, he looks to kind of go for the kill again, and Zawa drops him with the left hook. It is a clear, unquestioned, punch scored down, and you can even see that once he hit the ground, Duhut was a little bit out of it. But the ref completely missed it, standed them up, restarted them, and then, of course, they went back to just banging it out, looking for big shots. At the very end of the round, Zhao was hit, you know, kind of close to the bell. I can't remember off the, you know, if I couldn't hear it as clearly. But between that, between the downs that he probably scored, between the ref, like, pulling and separating him and, like, warning him for certain things, it seems like it was the ref and Duke versus Zawa. That's just how it seemed. Then Zawa goes into his corner. They took a little bit longer in the corner than I would have liked. I definitely think that that something that the ref should have looked at. But they go back to the out action, and immediately Duke's coming for the kill. Zawa puts him down. When Zhao puts him down, the first shot looks like it's a KO shot. And Zhao's corner almost ruins the fight for him because one of his trainers straight gets in the ring while they're doing the count. So the ref looks over at him, sends the guy back out of the ring, said, "I'm doing a count." Duke was just kind of sitting there. He got up and kind of like sat on his butt and like put his hands on his knees. So he's just kind of sitting there chilling. And the ref's just going crazy, you know, telling the other guys to get off. And he's doing the count. But while he's doing the count, he's making it the slowest count ever. The guys have already gotten out of the ring. He's still looking at them. Now, again, that's on them. They can't do that. They can't get into the ring. But they jumped in. And this is something that I've seen several times in Holland. I've seen it over the years multiple times where the winning corner or the corner of the team that just came back, they just start jumping all over the place. So for sure, and I mean for sure, I got to give credit to Zawa for staying composed and waiting for his opportunity. The ref clears it out. They go back to it. Zawa drops Dude again. He goes over to his corner. The ref is counting. But while he's counting, same thing. Looking over at Zawa's corner, waiting for a mistake to happen. They were calm. They knew the KO was stopping and, you know, happening at that time. And then, of course, Zawa finished it in a third knockdown right after it. I love it because it just showed how professional Zhao was. He never got involved in the argument match. When his corner jumped into the ring, he didn't, you know, go over there and address it. He just kind of sat there and chilled. When he didn't get the down he wanted, he didn't complain and say it was a down. He just stayed workmanlike, and that's what I really like about him. This is going to be probably the most underrated fight of this fight card. I do really, really like Murat. Like, I think that he gives me more consistent kickboxing. I mean, Aygun is just, he's a talented guy, and Zawa is, but Zawa also, he's got some losses against the higher level guys. He's really fought a lot of guys, but I think I lean towards Aygun in this one. The most fun fight, unchallenged, is Andrei Stoica versus Sahak Paparian. It's just they've got great history. Stoica, long time, super combat champion, fought a lot of guys, beat a lot of guys by stoppage, had a glory run where he was stopped, but he's still a great fighter. I thought that he's got more. Bogdan, his brother's more the flashy, look for the big KO, and Andrei Stoica just became a more workman-like kickboxer, and I really like Stoica. I like his skill set. With that said, I like Sahak Paparian's skill set more. I think that he's beaten more high-level guys, and I think when he lets his combination flow go, he's in good shape. The only problem, of course, with Sahak Paparian is what guy shows up, and he still beats most guys just rolling out of the bed because he's that talented. But if he has any kind of hesitation at all, Stoica will be able to outscore him. I don't know if either guy's going to go down. I think it'll just be a tough match. And I think, tough fight. And I think Stoica will put on a good show, keep the numbers close. But I think Sahak Paparian will be able to win. He just throws the right way at the right time. He's a very, very talented dude. So that wraps up that card, and again, that WFL card, it's going to be a lot of fun. I am looking forward to it, so definitely go check that out, and hopefully we get a good crowd, good fan base, good support for kickboxing. Their shows, as far as gate-wise they do okay, they're decently full in there, but if you can't get to the event, definitely check it out on TV. If you are in Holland, it is on Spike. So we're going to go ahead and jump into the glory card. And on that glory card, there are fights that are just absolutely fantastic. Better than I would have ever imagined. Really looking at from the first fight on the card, it just kind of gets started with, like, you know, the right kind of bang. They found another place for Alim Nabayev. And Alim Nabayev was originally supposed to fight as a replacement to fight Nicky Holdskin. I believe the first opponent was Kungulo, and then they went with Nabiyev, and then Holdskin was out. And then Nabiyev didn't have an opponent, so they moved him to this card. He will take on Jimmy Vinat. Here's my thing. Alim Nabiyev, I've been watching him since he was in his mid-teens, you know, 16, 17 years old. And he is one of the special kickboxers in the world. He's got really, really good skill set. He's got really, really good timing. He can switch stance. He's got length. And he's one of the most charismatic guys there is. Like, just, he knows how to play to an audience. He knows how to play to the crowd. His entrances, his everything. He just has an it factor. I remember in one of the fights on Super Combat, there was this thing where the girls were like looking at him while he was in the ring. They were trying to see him because, you know, he'd done so much flirting and fooling around, you know, as far as joking and his demeanor and so on. Like, he'd done that so much. And this was a really awkward moment where the guy he defeats, the girls are like trying to look at him, and then that guy walks by and the girls are like moving their head around the guy who's leaving so they can keep looking at him to see what Nabiyev is going to do next, because he has that kind of appeal about him. He can be one of the true stars to push the kickboxing game forward if he has success in the ring. He's very, very good. And I'm glad that finally he gets an opportunity to fight on the high stage, because he's the highest stage type of athlete. Jimmy Vinat is an awesome up-and-coming French fighter who's got some really cool KOs. He's got an awesome elbow KO that I showed to my students, you know, when he was in Thailand. Really good skill set, good resume. This is the right kind of fight for two young up-and-coming fighters. Right fight, right time. I'm really, really pleased with this. Jimmy's got a really good left hook. He's just real skilled all over. Nabiyev is the truth. It's going to be an awesome card. Next fight at middleweight is Aygan Yassin, or Boom Boom, as he takes on Maxim Vronsky. Vronsky is moving up. He's fought for Glory before. I've seen him fight a couple times after it as he's put on more weight. I've seen him fight at lower weights too. He's a solid competitor. He's good kickboxer. Of course, the thing with Boom Boom is you just gotta get ready for that, those KO explosions. And it's not that he has like a shot that really particularly like kills you. What Yusin does really, really well is he will start a combination with a head kick and then throw punches and then put another head kick in it and then throw punches afterwards. So how people play a combination of the low kick game, he'll go head kick to combination game, and he can really find big offense when he does it. Sometimes he does it and it scores in a series, and then guys retreat and he catches them with the big shot on the retreat. So he's very, very talented. Maxim, solid kickboxer. This one should be a fun one, and it will be the second bout shown on the Super Fight series. We then move on to the Super Bantamweight contender bout between Anissa Mexen and Funda Akalias. It really comes down to Akaius and how much she got her mental together. You know, as far as her goes, she was supposed to fight for the title in Chicago. Something came up. She said that for personal reasons and something just in her life, she wasn't able to compete for the title. They then went on and they found a one-week replacement who did exceptionally well, and I credited her greatly for that opportunity. But that allowed Tiffany Von Soos to get the W, and Tiffany Von Soos will be waiting the winner of this fight. Anissa Mexen, of course, you guys know with my liver kick rankings, Anissa Mexen is best resume in the world. She's the best fighter in female kickboxing and Muay Thai, period. Like, she's the best. Her and Tiffany Von Soos, if it happens, it is the fight. It is an exceptional, awesome fight. It is the best fight the promotion can make. And I'm really, really excited to see how that goes. Anissa Mexen is extremely talented. It will be interesting to see what happens. Funda, of course, trying to bounce back. She's got a long resume. She wants to get that title opportunity back. Plus, it's in New York. So she'll be on her A game as she goes against Anissa Mexen, the best in the world, on her home turf of France. So we'll definitely see how that one goes. Dylan Salvador takes on Massaro Glunder. You know, Glunder has got all the skill in the world. He is a consummate journeyman. He's a consummate professional for Glory. They ask him to fight at a bigger weight class, he'll do it. They ask him to fight on short notice, he'll do it. He is one of their better guys. And it's crazy because he had the K-1 opportunities originally. Got all the way up to fighting the best guy in the world. Took him to a split decision with Ku Fairtex, the current best guy in the weight class. Saki Nori, he's got a victory over him. Nori got the victory back in the rematch. But Glunder is experienced. He's got the resume of fighting the best in the world. He's just one of the, you know, got the KO pop with their power right hand. when he lets his offense go, he's a joy to watch. So the only thing is he's a little bit conservative last time, so we'll see if he opens it up. Dylan Salvador also coming off a fight where he was extremely conservative. He normally throws way, way more offense than he did in his last outing with Adam Chuck. But Dylan Salvador, awesome kickboxer, and he's back at his natural weight of featherweight. To think that this guy fought and, you know, Sitichai at the weight up and really gave him a great fight early on until fatigue stepped in from his earlier efforts. Dylan Salvador is an awesome fighter. This should be a really good fight. Light heavyweight bout will be the headliner of this part of the card as Florent Keiochi as he takes on Adoramani Kalabali. And Kalabali is a guy who I've wondered when he was going to get his opportunity. He's been a steady and consistent winning kickboxer and Muay Thai fighter in France for some time. He's had some big fight opportunities, had a loss to Nathan Carnage Corbett. I can't remember the card. Part of me wants to say it was on a MPL, but I'm not 100% sure about that. But they've met. He's lost to Carnage before. He lost to another competitor of note. I just name eludes me at the moment. Anyways, as far as his skill goes, if he plays a simple combo to low kick game, he scores pretty well. Just, you know, simple cross hook low kick, 1-2-3 low kick. You know, look for kick returns. Use his length. He's got an awkward style about him. Sometimes Kalabali will crush his own offense by getting too close, but when he lets it go, he plays at a distance, finds his range, he's really, really good. Florent Keiochi has got to work through the main difficulty of figuring out how to fight kickboxing on a consistent basis. When he does small scores, short combos, he does extremely well. Hook low kick. Jab, low kick. He does a nice jab to the body, low kick. Jab to the chest, low kick. When he plays simple like that, he should be able to score. But sometimes he'll throw 1-2, crush his own offense, get into some knees, and just kind of play real close. And he's such a tall, long guy. So really, this fight just comes down to just who can play that game consistently. Should be a really good bout. We're going to the four-man tournament, and of course, right off the bat, you see Fabio Pinca, and you're talking about one of the best fighters of all time. And of course, you've heard me say it on this podcast before several times. He is the best fighter from France ever, in my opinion. Anvar Boynazarov, I've said his name so many times. How can I mess it up now? Boynazarov. Of course, we know him. Hitter, going to close the distance, going to look to score offense. He just has to figure out the sneaky Pinca, because Pinca does do a really good job. He's got a nice sneaky hook, plays kicks and movements the right way. Very, very strong. You can't hurt him with you can't hurt him with body kicks. I haven't really seen him slow with low kicks. So you got to find the right kind of big shot on him. Pinca is the truth, and he's really been winning like crazy lately. So that is the task for Anvar, and the task for Fabio is just to deal with that power, deal with that guy who's going to throw those shots, who's going to throw the kind of shots that can get your hand raised on scorecards. So going to be a good one. Aziz Haley will go against Abdullah Ezbiri. Ezbiri, this is his first step-up opportunity, and he's a consistent scorer with his combo low-kick attack. Not necessarily the most powerful stuff, but the most consistent stuff. So if you watch his fight, you'll say, okay, this guy can stay the same kind of pacing. Not super fast, doesn't throw super hard, but he stays with the same kind of pacing for a long time. Hlali is, you know, of a different background. He's a guy who's fought so many of the best guys in the world, just hasn't gone his way. He's got a fight with Bukau, you know what I'm saying? He's got, you know, these opportunities and Kunlun and the different promotions in the world where just as talented as he is, he is more seen as, and again, no fault of his own, but as talented as he is a guy who's putting on good performances, but just not getting the, you know, the final, that big, you know, getting your hands raised. He fought Sancha, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's, you know, a really big, you know, feather in the cap. Singman, he fought him. He fought Jodvica. Like, he's getting to go against all these elite guys, Charlie Peters, all these elite guys in the Muay Thai world, just hasn't gotten his hands raised against the best, and that's the next step for him, and I know he wants that. So I'm excited that he gets this opportunity. We'll see how it fares with Ezbiri's consistency, and then we'll see who they meet in the tournament finale. Cedric Doumbé versus Johan Ladon is a fight that's got to happen, and it's happening at a good time. Johan Ladon, of course, is an awesome fighter and can never be counted out in any fight because he's got sneaky switch kick, sneaky left high kick, just cool, good offense in general, really gets his pacing down. Now, he's lost. He's lost to some of the better guys in the world, sometimes at a little bit bigger weight class. I think he fought Jeremy Parr at a little bit bigger weight class, but he's still game and he can still give anybody in this planet a really good fight. And Cedric Doumbé, of course, was the best fighter in the world until Chicago. Split decision didn't go his way, but he's right back at it, you know, playing his combination in the low kick game that he does from both stances, his movement, his defense, his charisma, the way he parries, the way he gets out away from shots. He's always going to be fun to watch, and more fun not just by what happens in the ring, but on the way to the ring and the lead-up. Cedric is one of the better kickboxers on the planet, always must see. Him and Johan Ladon should put on a good show. Artem Vakhadov returns as he goes against Ariel Machado, and of course we know what Ariel Machado wants to do. If he's going to win the light heavyweight title in France, he's going to have to build on, you know, movement and score, movement and score. He plays a touch-and-go game. And Artem Vakhadov is good to play that game too, but man, he's got such a strong commitment to the body. Bites down on the mouthpiece. He's got a good combo to low kick game too. So Machado, it's all about him getting enough numbers up to make up for the fact that Vakhadov is going to score numbers too, but he's going to score them with power. So that is the climb that Ariel is going to try to do. So he's got to be able to get his shots in and get out of there before Artem get his back. And Artem Vakhadov, of course, has got to do what he does. He's got to be the best fighter in the world at his weight class, play with those big, strong combinations and kicks, play with the sneaky offense every once in a while, play with the big power body shots and switch stance. He brings a lot of tools to the table. And the question is, can Machado's movement and scores and moves, can that do enough to win against the best fighter in the world at the weight class? So should be a lot of fun. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and I will try to do my best to be back next week with another podcast. It's been a lot of fun talking about kickboxing, and I will try to keep kicking these shows to you on a regular basis. Thank you. Peace.